You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Over 100 billion pounds of plastics are used in consumer products each year, and that's just in the United States alone. After a storm of concern over plastics with BPA, bisphenol A, because they contain estrogenic chemicals, many products now emphasize that they are BPA-free. So you might be concerned if you saw a headline that read, "Most plastic products release estrogenic chemicals." And if you knew what that means for your health, well, then you would really be concerned. The safety of BPA-free plastics is the subject of a story by Mother Jones reporter Mariah Blake. The scary new evidence on BPA-free plastics and the big tobacco-style campaign to bury it is in the March-April issue of Mother Jones. I'm very pleased it has brought Mariah Blake to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on.
When did BPA-free become a selling point for plastic products?
Sometime around 2008, I would say, the public became aware of the dangers of BPA. And many major retailers, including big box stores like Walmart, started pulling BPA-laden products from their shelves. And around this time, many companies then began producing products that were BPA-free, particularly for children, because the concerns are particularly grave for those who are exposed in vitro or in utero and those who are exposed during an early age.
Well, aren't there still a lot of BPA plastics around?
There are a lot of BPA plastics. So polycarbonate is the kind of plastic that generally contains BPA. And polycarbonate is still ubiquitous. It is still all around us. In addition, BPA is commonly found in a number of products that we come into contact with every day. So, for example, canned foods, the lining of tin cans often contains BPA. Register receipts, so oftentimes cash register receipts will have this sort of slippery quality. Those are also coated with BPA. So BPA is still with us. In fact, it's a booming business. But when it comes to a number of household products, particularly baby bottles and sippy cups and other products for children, the majority of those are marketed as BPA-free.
Well, the problem with BPA is estrogenicity. What does that mean?
BPA and other similar chemicals mimic the natural hormone estrogen. We all have estrogen in our bodies, and it plays a crucial role in all kinds of daily bodily functions, as well as in organ and brain development. But too much or too little of this hormone, especially early in life or for those who are exposed in the womb, can cause problems in the way the brain and organs develop and set us up for disease later on in life.
It's what scientists call xenoestrogens. They act as endocrine disruptors.
That is correct, yes.
And what effect does that have on people? And does it affect some more than others?
Well, as I've mentioned, so the people who are those who are most vulnerable are the young, and the effects are very wide ranging. In the case of BPA, it is known to cause everything from breast and prostate cancer to increased aggression, attention deficit disorder, heart problems, diabetes. The list is extremely long.
Now, why in a product that is petroleum-based, how does that happen?
Why does it contain synthetic estrogens?
Yeah, why do we wind up with these xenoestrogens?
Well, there are a variety of reasons. So in the case of BPA, it is what is known as a plasticizer. So it is used to make plastic more flexible and thus more durable. There are several other plasticizers that also are estrogenic. But there are also other kinds of chemicals that have these properties. So in some cases, if a plastic is estrogenic, it is because of the colorant they use or because of the chemical they put in the mold that they use to shape the plastic so you can get that piece of plastic more easily out of the mold.
And where do they get this stuff from?
Well, these are commonly manufactured chemicals. So there are thousands of chemicals out there that mimic natural hormones. We don't always know which ones they are because chemicals are not generally tested for safety in the United States, or not at least systematically tested for safety.
And when we it doesn't matter whether it is on a grocery receipt, is it generally transmitted when heat is applied? I mean, how does this stuff leach into our bodies?
Well, it can. There is evidence of what they call transdermal absorption, so you can absorb it through your skin. I think the primary concern has been about BPA and other similar chemicals leaching into food. It can leach into food. So if you just have liquid in a cup, that chemical can leach into that cup. However, there are certain conditions that make it more likely that the chemical will leach into your food or beverages. And those are, as I understand it, actually, UV rays, so exposure to sunlight, is the one factor that is most likely to increase the amount of these chemicals leaching from a product. The other factors are heat and steam. So putting reusable plastic products in a dishwasher, for example, can cause these chemicals to leach out of that plastic.
Now, you note that plastics are a $375 billion a year industry. Is that just in the United States?
That is just in the United States.
And what would the economic impact be if suddenly the public stopped using plastics, or is that even possible?
I think it's probably not possible. Plastics are so much a part of our daily lives. I don't envision that plastics are going to disappear from our daily lives. And I don't think it's necessary, because it is possible to make plastics that don't contain these toxic chemicals. So it's just a matter of the public and regulatory agencies prioritizing that.
Well, now we have this similar concern being raised about other plastics that don't have BPA.
Yes.
When did this new concern arise?
There have been a smattering of studies over the years, and actually the largest of these studies is not brand new. In 2011, a group of scientists, among them the employees of a firm called Certachem and a professor at Georgetown University, tested 455 commercially available plastic products and found that virtually all of them had estrogenic activity, or at least most of them had estrogenic activity. So that is the most comprehensive study that has been done. There have been other studies that have looked at particular kinds of plastic. For example, in 2009, a group of German scientists looked at what is known as PET or peat. So that is the plastic that's commonly used for water bottles, soda bottles, and whatnot. And they also found that that plastic is estrogenic.
Now, George Bittner's group, Professor George Bittner, I thought that was University of Texas, They issued a paper called "Most Plastic Products Released Estrogenic Chemicals." Is that the same one you were referring to as being the Georgetown paper?
That is. So, yes, it is. So it was a Georgetown University professor who partnered with a private firm that is headed by George Bittner. George Bittner is a University of Texas professor, and he also runs a company called Certachem, which tests plastics for estrogenic activity.
And when that paper was published in 2011, what kind of reception did it get in the scientific community?
In the scientific community, I mean, I think it was greeted with interest and alarm in the scientific community. I mean, things like, papers like this are part of a larger body of research, so I think people consider this a very concerning. But of course, the science is not nearly where it is with BPA, where we have 1,000 studies that show that these particular health effects are linked to BPA. But the more interesting element was the industry's reaction to this paper, because the industry really launched a very aggressive campaign to try to discredit Bittner and his findings.
What about the news media and politicians? Did they pay much attention?
You know, it did get some coverage in the news media. I don't think it made a huge impression.
My guess is, go ahead.
And I don't think it got a lot of attention in the political world.
My guest is Mariah Blake. Her article, The Scary New Evidence on BPA-Free Plastics and the Big Tobacco-Style Campaign to Bury It, is in the current issue of Mother Jones. Is that because of this Big Tobacco-Style response that your article's title refers to, that the politicians haven't paid much attention?
You know, I don't know if that would account for the response to this particular article. I do think that there is regulatory paralysis when it comes to chemicals of this nature. There are 80,000 chemicals that are in commerce in the United States. The vast majority of those chemicals have never been tested for safety. Chemicals are considered safe until proven otherwise by the regulatory agencies. And as a result, the industry has adopted certain tactics. Many industries have adopted certain tactics to downplay and cover up evidence that suggests their product is harmful, which muddles the picture both for the public and for politicians and regulators. So I think that the people don't necessarily know what to make of a study like this when it comes across their radar, because they are being given so many conflicting signals about how harmful a substance like BPA is. And I would argue there is no legitimate scientific controversy about the health effects of BPA, but the public, there are members of the public who are not under that impression.
A listener, James from Rahway, asks if all plasticizers are necessarily endocrine disruptors.
No, that is not the case. There are plasticizers out there that do not mimic estrogen or other hormones.
So why aren't they used?
Well, I think part of the reason boils down to money. So at the time that the first evidence came to light suggesting that BPA was harmful, BPA was a $6 billion a year industry. BPA is now somewhere on the order of a $18 or $19 billion a year industry globally. So plastics are a more than $300 billion a year industry. The cost to industry would be enormous if you were to phase out chemicals like BPA.
Well, there are countries that, and even some states that are banning it, aren't there?
There are countries who have banned it in infant products, and in fact, the United States has even done so. I believe it was last year, the FDA banned BPA in infant products after the industry asked that it do so because it wanted to reassure consumers that infant products were safe. There is no country that I know of right now that bans BPA outright. That is about to change. So France has announced that it is going to ban BPA across the board beginning in 2015. And in fact, there has been a renewed effort by the industry to downplay the dangers of BPA, and many of my sources believe it's because of this pending ban in France. Markets are now so global that a ban in France would affect commerce around the world. So this is actually the first genuine threat to the BPA industry. This is the first first meaningful wide-scale regulation of BPA, as far as I know.
Well, there's a long history of controversy over scientific openness or transparency when safety seems to conflict with profit, whether it's lead in paint or tobacco, pesticides, climate change. Beyond the possible impact on profit of negative research, do you see any patterns to the suppression of scientific study here?
Oh, absolutely. So the plastics and chemical industry have adopted the tobacco industry playbook almost wholesale. In many cases, they have relied on the same scientists and consultants as the tobacco industry to discredit the science on plastics. So Fred Wamsall once told me it's a very small playbook because it's so effective. So many other industries have adopted the tactics that the big tobacco industry pioneered and have used them very successfully.
Are these cases of what economists called asymmetric information?
I'm not sure. I would say that What is happening is you have multiple sources of information that are not always equally valid, but people who are not versed in the science do not necessarily have the tools to evaluate which information should be given credence and which should not. So, and I can give examples if that would be helpful.
My guest is Mariah Blake. Her article, The Scary New Evidence on BPA-Free Plastics and the Big Tobacco-Style Campaign to Bury It, is in the current issue of Mother Jones, the March-April issue. We will continue our conversation, and we'll be taking some calls after we take a little break. We're back with Mariah Blake. Her story, The Scary New Evidence on BPA-Free Plastics and the Big Tobacco-Style Campaign to Bury It, is in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine, and we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. We've been getting a lot of calls on this, so I thought I'd take a few of them. Lolly from Greenwich, Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I was wondering about the fleece things that we wear, fleece jackets and everything. I think those are made of plastic, are they not?
Mariah, do you know?
I believe they are. However, I don't know whether they have estrogenic chemicals and whether, even if they do, whether there's any risk of exposure.
Except when it rains, perhaps.
Except when it rains, perhaps. Yes. I would say that there are, given how much plastic is in our life, there are probably many other things that we come into contact with that are more likely to expose us to these estrogenic chemicals than fleece.
Let's take another call. This one is from Amy from Manhattan. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if it's possible to predict which plastics might have estrogen or endocrine-limiting properties by looking at their molecular structure and seeing if they're likely to fit the receptors.
Do you have a microscope at home, Amy?
I think I need more than a microscope.
That is a very good question, and in fact, that is one of the methods that they use to screen these chemicals for estrogenic activity. So they use computer modeling to predict based on the chemical structure before they subject these chemicals to costly testing to predict whether or not they have estrogenic activity. Another tool that is more readily available to the public is the number stamped on the bottom of a plastic container. So some are more likely to be estrogenic than others, although no type of plastic is guaranteed to be free of estrogenic activity. We actually have a chart on our website. It's called A Frightening Field Guide to Common Plastics, and it shows which plastics were most likely and least likely to be estrogenic in George Bittner's tests.
A lot of callers are wondering about products for children like baby bottle plastic liners now, and melanin plates. Are those products safe, and are the baby bottles, because you can't use glass in many instances, are the new plastic baby bottles much safer than the old ones?
The answer is some of them are and some of them aren't, and it's impossible to know in most cases which is which. So many baby bottles, for example, are made from a product known as Triton, which I write about at length in my story. And in fact, Dr. Wheel baby bottles, many of the baby bottles produced by companies that really cater to health-conscious consumers are made from this plastic. This plastic in Bittner's test was more estrogenic than polycarbonate, which is the kind of plastic that contains BPA. There are various other kinds of plastics that baby bottles are made from. Again, all of these had estrogenic activity in Bittner's tests in some cases. So, as I mentioned previously, the estrogenic activity can be the result not just of the plasticizer, but as but as a result of the color that's used in the bottle, any number of factors. And so unless a product is made specifically with a view toward not containing these kinds of chemicals, there is a chance that they will. And many of these chemicals have not been tested in advance, so the manufacturer may not even know it. So unfortunately, the only surefire way to guarantee that the product that you're giving your child does not have estrogenic activity is to use natural materials. And I would dispute the assertion that these products are not available in glass, because there actually are glass baby bottles. That's what I used with my 3-year-old son. There are stainless steel bottles that have silicone nipples and also stainless steel sippy cups. So, you know, everybody has to make their own choices. In the case of my child, that is the route I have gone with, because I don't feel confident that any of the plastics out there are safe.
I was thinking of daycare centers where they are concerned about the use of glass. But since this is estrogen, does this have as much of an impact on adult males as it does on women and children?
So generally, the risks for adults are lower than the risks for children because of the effect on development. So because these hormones are so crucial to brain and organ development, exposure to too much or too little during crucial phases of development can irrevocably alter the development of the brain and the organs. While there has been evidence of harm in adults, but it is certainly less compelling than the evidence for children. I should note, however, there is a recent study, an epidemiological study, so this actually looked at humans, and it found that the rates of prostate cancer were very closely linked with the levels of BPA in men's blood. Now, it was a relatively small sample size, but the differences between the two groups was very stark. So it is at least worth paying attention to that study, and you know, I'm sure there will be additional studies on that front to see whether, in fact, those findings are borne out by a larger group.
My guest is Mariah Blake. Her article, "The Scary New Evidence on BPA-Free Plastics and the Big Tobacco-Style Campaign to Bury It," is in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine. You were going to discuss how politicians use bad science to defend things like plastics, but we moved off to another direction. Could you get back to that?
Yes, and so it's actually more regulatory agencies than it is politicians, because politicians have tried to act on this. In 1996, Congress passed a law requiring the EPA to test all of the 80,000 chemicals that are in commerce for endocrine disruption. But as a result of at least partially as a result of industry interference in the EPA, that hasn't made much progress. So, in fact, they haven't even vetted one chemical so far. But essentially, the way it works is the industry manages to make inroads with many of these regulatory agencies, and the regulatory agencies become essentially captive to the industry. So one of the clearest examples of this is the FDA, which is the agency that technically would regulate a chemical like BPA. In 2008, Congress launched an investigation of the FDA's relationship with the industry, and it found that the FDA's assurances that BPA was safe were based mostly on two industry-funded studies, one of which was fatally flawed. So the control group had also been exposed to BPA, meaning there no meaningful conclusions could be drawn from that study. It also came to light in 2008 that the FDA had been allowing industry lobbyists to write its evaluation reports on BPA and to assess the evidence on BPA. So it was totally relying on industry to determine whether or not this chemical was safe, the industry that stood to make a profit from this chemical.
Well, the FDA delayed a review of BPA in December 2009, and didn't the Obama administration continue to delay that review?
Well, so what happened in that particular case was the BPA was supposed to be added to, and I believe it was the EPA's chemical of concern list. So that would have allowed some minimal regulation of the chemical. And that those reviews are supposed to take 90 days, and this one languished for 2 years, and then the Obama administration just quietly it was a proposed rule, essentially. It quietly eliminated this proposed rule. So, yes, the Obama administration has not really been any better than the Bush administration in terms of taking action on these issues.
The president has sought to make federal regulations more efficient. Legal scholar Cass Sunstein headed the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Have regulatory approaches changed over the Obama years?
In some arenas, they have. So, I mean, we see in terms of regulation of coal-fired power plants and other factors having to do with climate change, you see the Obama administration regulating much more aggressively. That has not been the case with chemicals.
We allow companies to self-certify, don't we?
Well, in the case of chemicals, there's no certification process. I mean, they don't even have to self-certify. They don't have to test these chemicals for safety. And when they do test, if they find that they're harmful, they don't necessarily have to disclose that information to the public. So this is, I would say, even a lower level of regulation than a scheme that requires self-certification.
Well, considering how important all of this is, are you surprised by how little research is being done?
I was really shocked, I have to say, when I started working on this story, how little we know about the chemicals that are in circulation in the United States, the chemicals that are in the products that we use every day. I really presumed that there was some sort of system in place to ensure that these chemicals were safe, but there is not.
Well, of the research that's being done, how much is done publicly as opposed to privately funded? And do the plastics manufacturers have in-house scientists doing research on their product safety?
Well, they have. So there is, in the case of BPA, where, you know, there's a substantial amount of evidence in the case of BPA. So there are more than 1,000 studies by academic scientists looking at the health effects of BPA. And almost all of them have found dramatic effects. There is a smaller number of industry-funded studies, although these studies tend to be larger, so they involve a large number of animals. These are multi-million dollar studies. Not a single one of those studies has found health effects in BPA, with BPA. So this is, and when you look at the design of those studies, there are very clear reasons why they're not finding effects. They're essentially designed not to find effects. So, for example, these studies often rely on a type of rat that is known as the Charles River Sprague Dolly rat. It is an inbred rat that is designed to have lots and lots of offspring. It also has a mutation that makes it insensitive to the hormone estrogen. So you can give this rat 100 times more estrogen per body weight, so relative to their body weight, than a human female with zero response. So they are essentially testing estrogen on an animal that does not respond to estrogen. And not surprisingly, they're not finding a result.
You mentioned that. Go ahead.
So this is just an example of the kind of tactic that the industry uses to sow doubt about the science connecting these chemicals to disease.
You mentioned that Harvard Center for Risk Analysis has published research favorable to businesses that provided funding for them. Do you think the funding is buying favorable Harvard research?
I think in the case of BPA, it's very clear because they cherry-picked a few studies that found, I mean, it was basically a literature review, and they cherry-picked a handful of studies that found that BPA wasn't harmful, most of them industry-funded studies. By the time the Harvard Center review was published, I believe there was more than 200 studies on BPA in circulation, and all of the academic studies, or almost all of the academic studies, had found health effects, and they basically just didn't take those into account. So I can't think of any reason besides industry bias that you wouldn't take studies by academic scientists that have been published in peer-reviewed journals into account.
Brian on Twitter asks, what about Brita filters and pitchers? And Emily from Brooklyn wants to know about Ziploc bags. Should we be concerned about them as well?
So let me respond to the Ziploc bag question first. So the study that George Bittner and his colleagues published in Environmental Health Perspectives, which is the premier NIH journal, found that the majority of plastic bags have estrogenic activity, and it was somewhere in the 90% range. The same is true of plastic wrap. That was one of the more surprising findings.
So when we microwave something in a plastic bag or with plastic wrap on it, we are really putting our health into a little bit of danger?
It does appear that way based on the research that's available.
Oh, great.
That was a life-changing revelation for me. In terms of Brita filters, I actually don't know what kind of plastic they're made out of, and even if I did, it would be difficult to determine because, as I say, in all of the kinds of plastic that are commonly used in food packaging or containers are estrogenic in some cases. So without testing a Brita filter, and I'm not aware that anyone has done that, it's impossible to say whether or not it is estrogenic.
Listeners wondered about the putting these things like Tupperware and plastic bowls into the dishwasher. You said that that helps, that actually leaches some of these things out. But wouldn't that mean that after a number of washings, they would have less of them?
That's not the first time I've been asked that question, and I don't know the answer for sure. But this is, you're talking about a chemical that's integral to the structure of the product. So I don't think that you can presume that it would wash out. So what's happening is the plastic is gradually breaking down and bits of this chemical are leaching as the plastic breaks down.
Well, that's reassuring.
I don't know if you reach a point at which no more of these chemicals are leaching out. But I would presume it is safer not to use older plastic.
One more thing. The Obama administration has been pushing for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a trade agreement between several countries on the Pacific Rim, not China. Do we know how the TPP would affect regulations on plastics?
I don't know. I don't know how that would affect regulations on plastics. I mean, I think at this point, China, for example, is pretty much where we are. So they ban BPA in children's products. They do not have a broader ban on BPA. However, one very interesting development is the vast majority of our plastics that are recyclable are recycled in China. And China has quit taking many U.S. plastics because they contain these potentially toxic chemicals. So as a result, virtually no plastics in the United States are being recycled at the moment. So that is one way in which this plays out in terms of international relations.
A listener, Marco from the Bronx, wonders if you use Tupperware and plastic bowls.
No, I do not. As I think I mentioned earlier, I have a 3-year-old son, so I'm particularly sensitive to this information, and I have gotten rid of basically all plastic food containers in my home. So I use the glass Tupperware equivalent. Mm-hmm. And for my 3-year-old son, I use, it's called Pura. It's a stainless steel sippy cup with a silicone nipple, so it does not even have a plastic spout. Most sippy cups do, even the stainless steel ones, but I found one that does not have any plastic on it.
Mariah Blake's article, The Scary New Evidence on BPA-Free Plastics and the Big Tobacco-Style Campaign to Bury It, is in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine, and we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Mariah, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.